Lani is a sophrologist, and today we're going to talk about self-sensing. But I always want to start because even we explain it every time, but in case there's someone who hasn't heard it or has forgotten and needs some remedial learning, what is sophrology?
Sophrology is defined as the study of conscious harmony. It's a whole person technique which aims to achieve balance of mind, body, spirit, breath, and consciousness. Let's see what else. It's a blend of Western science and Eastern philosophy. So into the 1960s, a psychiatrist, his name was Alfonso Caicedo, and he wasn't happy with the methods that were being used to treat his patients. So he went in search of something better, and after traveling through Asia and speaking with his colleagues, he developed the technique, and then coined the term sophrology. So basically, it's a whole person strategy, which uses Eastern and Western philosophies to help people identify their relationship with themselves, to develop a healthy relationship with themselves, because people don't really have a relationship with themselves or realize that they can have. And so it's all about helping people to become curious and become aware of daily living and how we interact with the environment around us.
And recognition too, I think, like I've picked up of that mind-body connection issue that a lot of different modalities are talking about these days. Mm-hmm. Or prompting the interest in things like sophrology as people are learning that, yeah, just learning about that and the effect of ignoring it, I guess.
Right. Well, not just it's not necessarily that we ignore it. We just don't consciously think about it. Like we also don't consciously ignore it. We just kind of live in a space of some conscious existence without really paying attention. Our bodies will function regardless of whether we're paying attention or not. And if we're paying attention, then we can actually work with the systems of our body to be healthy and create optimal health and well-being for, you know, our entire lifetime, you know, having healthy aging processes, because from the moment of our birth, we're aging, which a lot of times we don't think about that. Like we are all aging, you know, we talk about the aging population and then think of the elderly, but in actuality, we are all aging.
And so sophrology has, and you want to talk about self-sensing, and I think sophrology has kind of coined that term to describe this whole issue, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, so the human structure is actually really complex. We're made up of 11 systems, and they all work interdependently. But one of the things that's happening as far as self-sensing goes is that we experience, our life experience occurs outside of us and inside of us. And we have what is called the limbic system. It's a small part of our brain that is governed by our senses and then which goes on to relay information to the body. And then our body responds as these messages get sent out through the endocrine and the nervous system, which then create chemical responses with our hormones and what have you. And then we will respond emotionally to those because our emotions are also formed in the limbic system. We want to take on responsibility of those emotions, and emotions are not us. They actually are formed in the amygdala in the limbic system. It's what we do with that emotion that then we take charge of that. So we have a choice as to, okay, now this emotion is here in my body, what am I going to do with it? So we can actually have a choice. And that's all how self-sensing works, when we can sense the physical sensations of the body and what's going on. So we use sophrology. So in sophrology, we use what we call dynamic relaxation exercises, which is how we talk about meditation, because dynamic relaxation exercises, within them, there's balanced breathing, gentle movement, and creative visioning. So in meditation with sophrology, we're not just sitting in one place, you know, in a meditative position, like we would, like a lot of people, you know, you would envision someone like sitting cross-legged with their hands out on their knees. Well, that's not how we meditate in sophrology. And then there's also movement that takes place. So we're doing things with meditation that we would do on a regular basis, like sitting, standing, walking. Sometimes we open our eyes during meditation as well. So, and we do this in order to self-sense, to identify the physical sensations of the body when we're sitting in a certain position or when we're standing or what have you. So integrating that, you know, what is the body feeling? What are the physical sensations and what's going on? And how does that relate to our emotions and the hormones that are in our bodies and the chemical reactions that are taking place?
The thing I'm thinking about is the fact that babies, when they're born, are very, you know, they don't live in their heads. They're very much aware of all their senses. But this is something that we are unlearning as we grow up, would you say?
For sure. For sure. I mean, it's not a case of unlearning. It's more about we start to learn, you know, there's like a reaction, like a baby will do something, cry, for example, and we'll go running to see what's going on. And a baby can only communicate with their eyes, and their bodies and their voice. And so then we'll respond to that, to what's going on with the baby. But as we grow and develop and we start to form, you know, we start to experience life. So we start to form opinions and beliefs and cultures, and holding on to things, and then life experience happens. So now we have a past that we start to think about, and we start to consider the future and what's going to happen in the future. You know, when you're a baby, you have no sense of time. So there's no need to dwell in your past or, you know, think about future happenings. You're just present. You're always present. And so, you know, babies and children, they're just present in a space of curiosity, not because it's a quest for knowledge, but because they're curious in the moment about, you know, the flight of a bird or a flower that's laying on the ground instead of up on a tree. And, but it's not because they're looking for a knowledge about it. They're just, you know, I mean, you've probably had many of those why conversations with your children where you answer a question and then the next question is why, and you keep going.
Yes.
Not that they want to know, you know, it's not like they're computing any sense of knowledge. It's just that they are curious. That's all it is. It's a curiosity.
So that relates to the, like I'm thinking we start off, obviously curiosity is a natural state, especially when you're living in the moment like babies and children do, but that does, we do lose that as adults, and I guess this, what you're talking about with sophrology is about maybe not necessarily going back to that, but certainly somehow learning it again.
Well, it's about becoming present. So, so rather than going into a situation as if it's already happened, like, you know, you're a soccer coach, you watch a lot of soccer games, you watch, you know, your players play soccer. And if they went into every game at the beginning of the game saying, well, this is what happened last time, so it's going to happen again, so why are we even playing? You know, that sort of thing. Like, like that's not helpful, obviously. So you go in with the skills that you have. You go in with the confidence that I know my skills. I know what I need to do. I'm just going to go out there and be the best I can be. And not, you know, focused on any kind of past experience that you had, because if you're holding on to past experience in a negative way, then it's going to hold you back from your performance in the game. So it's about going out onto that pitch with curiosity and with a positive affirmation that I'm going to take all of the skills that I know, and I'm going to do the best I can in this game.
So yeah, so all right. So how do you, like, you've got a new client, or you're teaching a class? Like, how do you get people on to building this habit? I guess that's the phrase, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's done through meditation. So when I meet with my clients, we'll have a discussion for maybe 20 minutes or so, talking about whatever it is, whatever the reason is that they've come to me for that day. We'll have that discussion, and then we'll do some meditation. And the meditation that we practice, I will actually have a recording of it, and they will then go home and practice it outside of our meeting time. And then the more they practice the meditation, the more they're able to build new, fresh neural pathways in the brain and delete the ones, or cover up the ones that they've been focused on. So when we talk about self-sensing, when you identify certain emotions, like we might even touch on something that happened in their past and some emotions that that come up when they think about a certain event that took place. And what are those emotions? And are those emotions helpful? And are they beneficial? Or are they holding you back from accomplishing your goals and your objectives? And if it's holding you back, then we try to identify the physical sensations in the body and what you're feeling in that moment in the meditation and when you talk about these things, so that when those physical sensations come up for you outside of meditation, you're able to deal with them in a more productive way, because you've now created that neural pathway in the brain, which is helpful and resilient. And now this is now my plan of action going forward when my body physically feels this way.
So you'll sit with a client and do a meditation and then talk about what came up afterwards?
Yes. Yep. So it's 20 minutes of discussion prior, and then a 20-minute meditation, and then another 20 minutes of discussion after.
And what sort of things do people say?
Well, so there might be some tension that they're holding in certain areas of the body. Maybe a physical, like a lot of times we feel our stress in our shoulders, our chest, or our abdomen. Mm. And, you know, that's usually emotional stress that comes on through, you know, as we bring up these memories that are being held in the limbic system in the brain. And some memory will come up. So when we talk about self-sensing, there might be a sound that they remember, or a scent. You know, there's an aroma that comes up that reminds you of something that might have been stressful in the moment. And now when you hear that sound again, that stress presents itself as butterflies in your belly, for example.
So that's kind of a trauma-related thing.
Right. Yeah, and these traumas would be based on past experiences, and some people can associate, you know, they're triggered by a certain color or a certain sound or a scent or something, you know, because some traumatic event happened, and while that traumatic event was going on, the body was self-sensing, so the body was sensing the sight, you know, with all of your five senses, and now when that sense comes up for you, your mind is taken back to that time again, and your body starts to sense that if you spend too much time on it. I'll bring up a happy memory rather than talking about trauma right now.
Okay.
Because that can be triggering, and someone might be listening, and now we're triggering something for them. So, like right now, it's Mandarin season in New Zealand because it's winter, but winter for me when I was growing up in the States, in Canada, was December, and it was always the time of year where mandarin oranges were prevalent in our home, and Christmas morning and mandarin oranges are a huge association for me. So every time I break open a mandarin orange, I think about Christmas. And so here it is July or August now, and I'm thinking about Christmas because every time I eat a mandarin orange, I'm thinking about Christmas in Canada when I was growing up. So the color orange, the juiciness of it, the scent of it, the sounds that were taking place while I was eating the orange, like all of these things come up for me. And then I can identify the physical sensation of in the body as that's taking place. So for me, that's a happy memory. So I can identify how my body senses and feels when it's happy, when it's truly happy.
All right, but we don't particularly need to analyze ourselves when we're happy, I expect.
Yeah, you do, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's really important to analyze yourself when you're happy, because then you know the difference between how your body and you feel, your mind, how your mind-body connection is when you're happy, and how your mind-body connection is when you're sad and or in despair or melancholy or what have you. So which space would you prefer to be sitting in, and when do you feel most healthy and alive? It's about noticing aliveness in the body and aliveness for yourself. So are you wanting to sit in that space of trauma and negativity, or do you want to sit in a space of happiness and joy? So when you can go into your past and think about happy memories, then you can pull from those things the what is resilience, what is beneficial, what is useful for me, and take those forward with you and leave the negativity of the trauma behind, so that though you don't have to be triggered anymore by a certain color, a sound, you can start to find happiness in that color or happiness in that sound, because chances are that there is going to be happiness in that color or in that sound. You just haven't noticed it because you've been so focused on the negative rather than the happy.
I had a question like, I was gonna go on.
No, I could probably come up with some unhappy memories associated with mandarin oranges, like
if you really wanted.
Yeah, if I really wanted to, but it's not necessary, because I choose to stay in the happy space where my body is healthy and comfortable, because your body obviously is producing greater capacity when you're in a state of happiness rather than in a state of despair.
So we're talking about specific traumatic events, but sometimes, like in terms of shutting ourselves down emotionally or shutting down our awareness, Sometimes that might be done just because your life is kind of hard. You're in a job you really don't like. Maybe you've got a young family and it's a real grind. There's lots of people been in that situation. So there's no specific capital T traumatic events happening, but still that process happens anyway.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that differently at all?
Again, it's just getting into meditation, breathing strategies. These things are always very helpful because you're going in internally. I tell people you have the answer, and we just try to help you find it, because the answer is internal. It's within. You just have to sometimes dig deeper. Like when you're talking about the state that you're describing is a deep blue mood of hardship and melancholy. And when you're in that state, you're in brain fog. You can't think clearly. You're just on robotic mode, where you're just going from one thing to the next. As you do every day, you wake up in the morning and you go through the same routine, and your life basically feels gray. You're in brain fog. And so by doing meditation and breathing strategies, you're able to identify happiness in the body. You're able to identify love and joy and how all of these things feel for you. You start to identify what things feel like when you are in a state of productivity, and then you can move into that space, because now you're creating those neural pathways in the brain through meditation.
So let's play devil's advocate here. Say someone's and they've got the job that really sucks, and they're like, "Well, I don't want to waken up my senses and feel the pain of doing this job that I hate all day every day. I'd rather not be feeling that. Thank you very much." Is there a solution to that? aside from leave the job?
Yeah, because you start to develop the capacity to have alternative thinking. So you now start to, because you have now identified how happiness feels in the body, when you're in that space of despair and I hate this, you actually can be like, well, you know, I actually have a choice to, and I can choose to sit here and hate this, or I can choose to find something good about it. There's always good and bad in everything. There always is. It's just a matter of changing the perspective and finding. And sometimes you have to look harder and dig deeper. But there's always something. It's the law of polarization. There's always, you know, we're moving along that line. I mean, nothing is ever absolutely hot or absolutely cold that you can't switch it into another space. You know, if you've turned the hot water faucet on and it's becoming too hot, well, you can turn on some cold and then it becomes lukewarm. There's always, you always have a choice.
So I think most of us know that, but we also know that there are times when we are like deep in that blue space. And and we can't quite see it. Is that where meditation is quite useful to like take you out of that for a while?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely meditation. I mean, think about, you know, let's go way back in history in the extreme of a prisoner of war or the Holocaust victims. You know, there's plenty of stories out there where they went into their meditative processes and they imagined certain things happening, like, you know, we've all seen in a movie, a Holocaust movie, where we see the prisoners of war sitting around talking about the food that they remember eating and, you know, how that made them feel. And they start to have happy, smiling faces. And, you know, and so it's really, we control the things that we think about. So we can choose to give into that space of despair, or we can choose to get out of it and be in a space of joy and happiness. We have that choice. And when we can, when we practice meditation on a regular basis and we do balanced breathing strategies on a regular basis, we can retrain the brain and govern ourselves to make choices that are beneficial and helpful and create clarity in our minds and pull us out of that brain fog.
So specifically, what's the benefit to people if we're in like that horrible prisoner of war situation? What's the benefit of imagining something? I mean, people might be saying, well, that's not true, that there's nice food there. So what's the benefit of imagining something that feels nice? Like, what's the physiological, I guess there's a physiological result from doing that?
Yeah, there definitely is, because the body can only exist in the present. And so in your present moment, the body will respond to what is happening in the brain. So your limbic system, your thoughts, it's that mind-body connection again. So allowing your thoughts to govern the limbic system, a man is only as great as his thoughts, right? A human being can only accomplish the things that he thinks about. And so when you are governing your thoughts appropriately, your body is physiologically responding to those thoughts. So you are creating happiness in the body. And how does happiness feel in the body? We have a meditation for that. So you can actually identify how happiness feels in the body. You can create love and identify times in your life when you felt truly loved, or when you were truly loving another being, another living creature or person or what have you. And how does that feel in the body? What does that feel like? And so when you can identify the physiology of the body, then you start to build it and develop a healthy relationship with your body, so that you can then start to have conversations with the cells of your body. And, you know, you can, because you're governing your thoughts and you're determining what you choose to think about, now you can tell your body, we're going to think about this and move into this other space of joy and happiness and clarity. Because when you're in that space, you can actually make clear decisions as to what the next step is going to be, rather than allowing life to just take over and do what it's going to do, and you start to feel like you have no control of it. You do have control of it, and it's just all about taking that control.
What does sophrology say happens, like, if we spend all our time dwelling on negative stuff over the course of decades? Like, is it, has things to say about what this is doing to us physiologically? Because I think we've established that what's happening in the mind is having a physical effect on the body.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so what's happening to us?
High blood pressure, heart issues, diabetes, depression, gastrointestinal issues, aches and pains. Like, all of these things will settle in the body at some level. And not only does it settle in, you know, when you think about, this is going into another totally different topic, but
yeah.
When you think about the epigenetics and your genes and your DNA,
yep.
Like, what your ancestors have suffered has settled in their DNA, which then comes forward. So when we talk about hereditary and things that you've inherited, well, you've inherited high blood pressure, or you've inherited diabetes or cancer cells or depression or some of these things. Well, it's because it's coming through the line. There is a way to overcome it, and you overcome it as you take control and you change and you alter the physiology of your body so that going forward, those diseases don't have to continue on.
Yeah. So folks, we're talking to Lani Puriri about sophrology, and self-sensing is the topic for the day. Can you actually do something on the radio now that's kind of like talking people through sensing their body? Do you have a thing like that? I didn't tell you we were going to do this. I just thought of it now.
No, there actually is. So it's a simple exercise. If you think of one of your senses that you kind of resonate with, that, you know, tends to be something that's very alive for you. We already talked about mandarin oranges, so let's talk about eating, the sense of taste. Mm. So when you imagine something that you really love to eat, and then you think about, okay, when I think of this item that I like to eat, so for me it was mandarin oranges, well, what do I smell and how does my body feel? What do I feel when I smell the mandarin orange? What do I see when I see a mandarin orange? What do I feel? How does my body feel? What are the physical sensations that happen for me? When I touch a mandarin orange, what do I feel? So as you see with your eyes, hear with your ears, taste with your mouth, smell with your nose, and touch with your skin, what do you feel? What are the physical sensations? Close your eyes. What do you feel when you are holding an avocado or holding a hot piece of bread? You know, what's your favorite thing to eat, and what do you feel? What are the physical sensations that are happening in your body when you are interacting with something that you truly love?
So that's what you do.
Yeah, if you can intentionally, with curiosity and wonder, be aware of that thing that you're eating. And it's actually really, really important. Our digestive system is, you know, there's that mind-gut connection. Mm. And when we can identify what is all the physical sensations that are going on when we are eating, you will start to, so many changes will take place in your body when you actually intentionally eat with consciousness and become aware, and you're slowly eating and you're consciously breathing through it. You start to interact with all the senses of your body, everything that's happening when you're eating. Mm. Because all of your senses are connected. You're not actually, like, you and I are having a conversation right now, but while we're talking, what are you seeing? What are you touching? What are you hearing? What are you you know, there's a lot going on around you. And so it's all about being present in the moment. And when you can be present with that, then you're more focused. Like you and I are more focused on our conversation right now. We're not so focused on what's going on outside the window, because if we were, we wouldn't be having an intelligent conversation.
So. I tell you what, I just had someone peering at me through the window and I could see it out of the corner of my eye. So I was struggling a little bit, but I'm back.
Right. So it's, you're very, you know, you're aware of these things and you can see how you're easily distracted, right?
Mm,
but
yeah.
when you are tuned in and you are conscious, and you're very aware of what's going on, you have clarity and you can choose to be tuned in or not. Like you just made a choice of I'm going to stay tuned into this conversation. Because at the moment, this is my priority. My priority is not that person outside the window.
Yeah.
So it's how we connect with our bodies, developing that healthy relationship with the body, identifying what our priorities are, and then recognizing the need for developing clarity through curiosity.
All right, so very good chatting with you this morning, Lani. Normally at the end of a conversation I say, can people talk to you, get in touch with you, or things like that, but you're actually going back to the US for a little while, aren't you?
Well, I am, but I have Zoom, which is how we're talking right now.
Of course, yes, of course.
So unless it's the middle of the night for me, I'm happy to engage with people. I'm accessing my email. I am working while I'm over there, so... Yep. Email works. I'm also on social media. So it's my social media is at Sophro Solis, and Sophro is spelled S-O-P-H-R-O. So at Sophro Solis is my, you can find me on Messenger, Instagram. And then if you want to email, you can sophrosolis@gmail.com and get in touch. We'll have more conversation. I do, one-to-one sessions with people, and I also do group gatherings. I really enjoy doing group sessions. It helps for people to identify that they're not the only ones in the space that they're existing in, and to gain support and help from others, and the insight from other people is always really helpful. So, yeah, group conversation, group discussions, lots of coaching. I do corporate coaching as well as... Just everything. Everybody has a human body, so and we all have our senses. So it's, you know, I can dwell in any space that's necessary. So if you have a group or if you have an issue that you wanted to have a conversation about, I'm happy to explore that with you.
Awesome. All right. Well, Lani, thank you for your time this morning, and I hope you have a good trip. And it's not too stressful with the travel. I hear it's not the best still, but at least you can go.
I'm going to the States, and they're not restricting anything. So I've been told that people traveling to the States, the worst part of it is getting in and out of Auckland.
Okay, right. Oh, well, that's good then. That's good. Yeah. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, so it should be good. I'm excited.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, thank you for your time this morning, Lani.